9-8-9. My pleasure to bring Mary Dave back.
My name's Damon. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank you again for asking me to speak here, for giving me this opportunity. It's been a real pleasure to be doing this, and I'm looking forward to tonight and to next week. I think I went a little, I got a little hung up last week by trying to recap first. I'm not going to make that mistake this week. I'm going to roll right into seven. So the one thing I'll say is, you know, having that willingness in the sixth step, and I did talk about this last week, but recognizing that this is not about me having a job to do now, that this isn't about me having to go out and work on these defects, was a really important part of this process for me. You know, because that's what I had always been trying to do throughout my life, is trying to work on myself and trying to like get in there and grab a hold of the things that were going on in me and reshape them and make myself into something different, you know. And what these steps were suggesting is that instead of having to continue to struggle in that way, instead of having to continue to try to manage, all I needed to do at this point was to ask for these things to be taken. And I really love talking about the second step because I feel like it's something that gets overcomplicated painfully commonly, you know. It's like six and seven together are like a paragraph or so in our book, you know. And it's very simple. It says, when I get to the place where I'm willing to have these defects taken. And so at this point now I've done this inventory. And I've looked at what's all the stuff inside of me that's blocking me off from this power that also is deep down within me. You know, this is the stuff now that I'm seeing that is going to lead to my drinking again. This is the stuff that's going to lead to my death. Because if my only shot as an alcoholic is a connection with this power, and this is the stuff that blocks me off with this power, then I'm looking right here at the reasons for my relapse. You know, we can talk a lot about, oh, well, you know, I relapsed because I lost my job, my girlfriend broke up with me, the people at the meeting didn't respect, you know, whatever it is. And none of those things are the truth. You know, it was pointed out to me, my sponsor, when we were taking a look at the fourth step, he pointed out a section where it talks about, you know, resentment cutting ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. And he said, that's the first stage of the relapse. And it says the insanity of alcohol returns again, right? Because if it's God that's protecting me from the insanity of alcohol and I'm now cut off from God, well, then now the insanity returns. So that's the next stage of the relapse. It says the insanity returns and then we drink again. And so there's the next leg of the relapse. So I'm looking on this page at all of the stuff that is going to be the cause of my relapse. And now the question is, am I willing to be rid of it? And so if that's the case, now I can ask God, God, please take this from me. I can twist a lot of this stuff around. You know, the book is just the book. And there's words on paper, and my ego can get in there and do all kinds of stuff with those words. And I can set myself up for some real fear and danger, depending on what I do with this, you know. And so I can take that seventh step, and I can say this prayer, and I can go into it with the idea that, oh, well, you know, just because I ask doesn't mean that God's going to take this stuff. See, there's my time, and there's God's time, and even though I want the stuff gone, maybe God's not ready for these defects to be gone. Okay? I need a God that makes sense. The whole problem that I had with other people's conceptions of God that I was given is they didn't make any sense to me when I really sat and thought about them. And so now here's this proposition that, well, wait a minute, so I'm asking God to do God's will. I'm saying, listen, my life is yours. I'm going to do your will. You tell me what you want me to do. But here are these things that are in the way, and so I need you to take them from me. How can it make sense that God wouldn't want to take them? And, you know, I've used the analogy with guys that I worked with before. I'd say, you know, if you were at my place and I said to you, hey, can you take my car and go around down to the gas station and fill my tank up? And you said, okay, well, so I'll need your car keys. And I said, well, no, I'm not going to give them to you. So could you take my car and go get gas? You know? And that's the vision that we have of God sometimes, of like, I'm saying, God, you tell me what to do, and now God's told me what to do, and I'm saying, but God, in order for me to go do it, here's what I need from you. I can't just go do this thing. There's stuff that's blocking me off. I've got these defects. I need you to take this stuff. Bless you.
Thank you.
God's got to take it. You know, I love in the, I have a copy of the text of the original manuscript, you know, before they went in and edited things out and said, well, what's going to scare people off and what's going to, you know. And I love digging into it because I can really get some more insight into the program at times. And there's a line when it talks about the third step. In our text today, it says, you know, we had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed. In the original manuscript, they said, being all-powerful, he must necessarily provide what we need. And I get so much hope and strength out of that. That realization that if what I'm honestly asking for is to be able to do what God wants me to do, the only possibility is that God's going to give me the strength to do it. And so now I need to recognize if I'm asking for these defects to be removed and they're still showing up in my life, I've got two possibilities of how I could perceive that. Either it's God's fault or it's mine. What's more likely? You know? So I could say, oh, well, yeah, I'm perfectly willing, but God doesn't want to have this stuff gone yet. Or I could get honest and say, is it possible that I'm still getting something from this particular defect? Is it possible that I'm not as willing as I'm trying to sound? You know? I love the fact that right now, tonight, 7 is paired with 8 and 9. You know, we usually sort of think of like 4 and 5 together and 6 and 7 together. And 8. But 7 really does lead very directly into 8 and 9. And I make much more of a connection with those things. We say that 7-step prayer, and it says we've completed step 7, but now we need action. Faith without works is dead. We need action, right? And so what that's saying is I can say this 7-step prayer, and maybe I don't have faith that God's going to take all my defects away, and so of course then I'm not going to get a whole lot of results out of that prayer. But maybe I do have the faith. Maybe I have faith that God's going to take all this stuff away, and so the next thing they point out to me is, yeah, but faith without works is dead. And so I can say the 7-step prayer and have the faith that God's going to take this stuff, but if I stop right there, I'm not going to have an experience. I need to go out and now clean up the past. The best way for me to experience that these defects are gone is for me to go out and clean up the harms that were caused by me acting out of these defects. That's how I get to experience so clearly that they're not there anymore. I have my own twist or my own take on those 9-step promises. You know, there's all these things that they say, okay, so now we're going out and we're making these amends, and we're going to be amazed before we're halfway through. We find a new peace and a new serenity, and fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us and all these different things. And I think, I don't see them as being the promises in the 9th step. Those are the promises of the 7th step. If I ask for God to take all these things away, well, then that's the result of God taking this stuff away. But the catch is, I have no way of knowing that they're gone until I do 8 and 9. If my fear of economic insecurity hadn't been taken, how is it that I was able to sit across the table from this person and give them the money back that I had stolen? If I'm in fear of economic insecurity, or if I've got fear of people, how is it that I sit in front of the person that's put me down, you know, so many different times in my life, but I still have the courage and I have no idea how they're going to respond to what I'm about to say to them, but I still find myself sitting in front of them and owning up to my wrongs? You know, that fear had already been removed, but I get to experience it by doing 8 and 9. one of the things that can happen is I go out into the world in bad habits. You know, I've been used to living life a certain way for a long, long time. You know, so a situation comes up and my first impulse is to lie. My first impulse is to use. My first impulse is to manipulate, to steal, to, you know, all these different things. The defects are not my abilities to do those things. The defects are the fact that I don't have a choice. The defect is that I have no say in my own behavior. I can't help but lie. I can't help but manipulate. I can't help but steal. I ask to have those defects removed. Now God gives me freedom. Now I'm free. I can behave, I can lie or not lie. I can steal or not steal. I've got that freedom to make choices in my life now. And what happens is I need to be conscious throughout my day of what's going on so that I don't start doing the same old stuff, not even realizing that I don't have to. You know, and it's sort of like another example that I think about, you know, there was a cat that I had, a pet for a long, long time, you know, and she loved to eat the bottom of my cereal. You know, when I was done with my cereal, I'd put the bowl on the floor and let her have the rest of it, you know. And I was so in the habit of doing that after she passed, I would find myself, you know, I'd eat cereal and I'd go down and I'd put the bowl on the floor. And there was no need for me to do that anymore. But I was doing it because I wasn't thinking about what was going on in my day. And I can do the same thing with these defects of character. You know, I ask God to take them, and God takes the defect. God takes the need to do this stuff. There's no need for me to lie anymore. God's taken it. But if I'm not thinking about what's going on in my day, if I'm just running around, I can end up lying even though I no longer need to. And so that also leads into the 10th step. You know, the continuing to take inventory, being conscious about my actions. So there's all kinds of things that can lead me to believe that 7's not working. Am I willing to have that faith? Am I willing to have that concept of God that makes sense and say, I'm looking for God to give me the power to do what God wants me to do? I say that prayer, and now I need to get up and go out and act in willingness. I had an experience early on. I had lost, you know, lots of jobs in my first year of sobriety, and so once again, here I was, you know, needing to go out and look for work, and I wasn't doing it, you know. And I talked to the sponsor that I had at the time, and he said, okay, well, you need to pray for the willingness. You know, ask for the willingness to go out and apply for these jobs. And so what I would do is I'd get up in the morning, and I'd hit my knees, and I'd pray, God, grant me the willingness to go search for a job today. You know, and I'd do that prayer. And then I'd get up, and I'd go over, and I'd turn the computer on, and I'd play solitaire. And I'd wait for God, okay, when's it coming? You know, God's going to... And I said this to him, and he said, no, that's not how it works. Like, you need to pray and not then wait for God to swoop down and take over, but pray and act like a guy who asked for help, you know. And it's not act as if, you know. That's just more pretending. I spent my whole life pretending, you know. It's not act as if something has taken place. It's have faith and act because something has taken place. I just got down on my knees and asked this power that I've been willing to believe in, give me this strength, and so let me get up and see what happens. And when I would do that, I found all kinds of things took place. You know, in my first 7 step, I would find myself in conversation with somebody, and I'd be talking to somebody, and it was like I would sort of float above the conversation momentarily. And like I'm watching it, and I could, while my mouth is moving and I'm talking to you, I could go, I'm being dishonest right now, I'm in manipulation, I'm in fear, and I could see the stuff in black and white for my inventory, you know, in my own handwriting on the page. And I had that moment of like, what do I do? You know? And I'd find a moment to excuse myself from the situation, oh, I have to go to the bathroom, I'll be right back, you know. And I'd go and I'd say the prayer, and what I try to do is say, not God, please take these things from me. I already asked that. God, remind me that you've taken this from me. Remind me, grant me the faith and the willingness, grant me the courage to trust that you have taken this from me and let me go back into the situation and do something different. And so I'd walk back in and I'd say, I must have the ability to be honest now. And so I'd walk out and I'd tell the truth. And I had these amazing, amazing experiences. And what happened is things changed so drastically for me that what's the next logical thing to do? Sit still. And say, oh, I got it from here, you know? And I stopped moving because things are great. Why should I do any work? You know? And that's why I got to experience that faith without works is dead. You know, things started to drop off a little slowly for me at first and then more rapidly, you know. Now, this was my first pass through. And this was not out of the book, really. And so, you know, the guidance that I had wasn't necessarily as strong as the second time I went through the steps. But it was when I got up and got to work again that things, you know, began to change. And so, okay, so now here I go into 8 and 9. I've got to make this list of all the people that I've harmed. But the beautiful thing is they say in the book, we already have the list. You know, we made it when we took inventory, right? If I've made this list of all these resentments, and now in each one of them I've stepped back and said, let me disregard the other person entirely and look at where I've been wrong. Well, now I have this whole list of all these people that I've been wrong in relationship with them. And so now there's lots of things that I can go down this list and say, okay, well, did I cause harm in this situation? You know? It wasn't necessarily the case in every single situation. You know, there are times when the wrong was really between me and God. And maybe, you know, in this particular thing, like this person wasn't affected in any way, or maybe they had no idea that it was even going on. You know, I was in judgment about somebody that didn't even know who I was, you know. So, of course, okay, well, that person wasn't harmed. There were a lot of other people on this list that had been harmed. And I also had to take some time and sit with, is there anybody that I've harmed that didn't make my resentment list? Because what happened is I came across some really wonderful people in my active years before I even started drinking, you know, that I had no reason whatsoever to resent them, and yet I had harmed them because I was running around on selfishness and fear. So I got to add some names to the list as well. And now I needed to go through and do some meditation and say, you know, am I willing to make all of these amends? You know, I hear a lot of talk at meetings, and I had questions myself about amends that, like, well, is it possible that these amends shouldn't be made or these amends can't be made, you know, whether it's someone that's passed on or maybe it's like a violent drug dealer or maybe it's a legal situation or maybe it's an ex-girlfriend or whatever. There could be all kinds of things that maybe it's questionable as to am I actually going to go out and make this amend or not. But the thing that I appreciate in 8 is it's saying we become willing to make amends to all of them. You know, if there's a violent drug dealer that I'm not necessarily going to go back and make amends to, that doesn't mean that I just skip the part where I'm willing to do it. I really do need to sit down and come to that place in prayer and meditation where, you know what, I'm past the ego that's holding me back from it. I'm past the fear that's coming me back from it. And if this is what God wants from me, I would be willing to go and do this thing, you know. And I really appreciate the way that 8 and 9 are laid out in our book, that there's all these example after example of different things that these guys experienced, you know, different situations that they were in. And I got to see things like people saying, you know, here's a situation where I might go to jail. And they said, we thought that the person should have been willing, you know. Yes. We need to be willing to go to jail. Another situation where the guy says, you know, if I stand up in front of my town and acknowledge this thing, I might destroy my reputation. What's that going to do to my family, you know? And the guy says, but I realized if I need this relationship with God, I can't put anything before that. I can't say, well, I need a relationship with God, but if it means that my reputation might get harmed, if it means that I might lose my job, well, then that I'm not willing to do. You know, I need to go in and face, what am I really willing to do for this new experience? What am I really willing to do for this relationship? And what I got to find, the questions that I needed to ask were not, do I trust this person? You know, it's not about, if I go and make amends to this guy, is he going to find some way to hold it over my head? If I go and make amends to this boss, am I going to lose my job? You know, all these different things. It's not about trusting the human being that I'm going to make the amend to. It's about recognizing I have no idea what they're going to do, and it's none of my business. It's, do I trust this power? Do I trust this God? There's a... This is, you know, a little bit of a tangent, but, you know, around the subject of anonymity, there's a woman that I know in this fellowship who I think is a fantastic example of these principles, and she's a judge, and she talks about how she's fully open about her being a recovered alcoholic with, you know, the other judges, the prosecuting attorney, the district attorney, all these people. Everyone knows that she is a recovered alcoholic. And she says, I don't believe that God picked me up out of the mud and cleaned me off just to let me fall back in it because I choose to be honest with people about who and what I am. You know, now this is somebody that was able to act as a demonstration to me that it's not about trusting her fellow judges or her fellow lawyers or whatever it is. It's about trusting this power. And I need to do that same thing in 8 and 9, or I'm not going to be willing to do half of these because so many of them could come back to bite me in some way. So now that I've become willing, you know, what happened with me is I sat down with the sponsor and we talked about these different amends, and I got some guidance as to how to do these particular things. You know, what was appropriate to say and not say. What maybe needed a little more prayer and meditation, and what I was ready to go out and do right then. I've had a couple of different sponsors in this process, and so I got to benefit from a couple of different points of view. And one that I appreciated is one of my sponsors said, in our book, it talks about, it talks about when somebody has had extramarital affairs, you know, and should they necessarily, like, go and tell their wife about this stuff, and how is that whole thing going to be handled? And what they say is, no outsider could appraise such an intimate situation. And when we were reading over that, he pointed out to me, he said, you know, I'm an outsider in this. You know, I can't presume to tell you what you need to do to clear things up between you and the power of your understanding. And so he had the faith, not in me, but in this process of the steps and in that power, that if I had really been giving myself over to this so far, that I would have the ability to go into meditation and find out, you know, is this something that I need to do? Is God, what's that voice trying to say? But he helped to reflect back to me what came up for me. So regardless of who it is that I was working with, you know, each of these sponsors would guide me, and so I got to go out and have some really fantastic, really powerful experiences. You know, some of them were more personal than others. Some of them were more emotionally intense than others. You know, I had situations like I went back to a library that, you know, before I was drinking. You know, before I was an active alcoholic, but with someone with a spiritual malady that was driven by fear, selfishness, you know, all the things that make up the self-centered personality, I would go to the library and I'd say, you know, I never seem to be able to return books on time, but I know I'm going to bring them back. And so what I'll do is I'll just take this book. I'm not going to check it out. I just take it. And I'll bring it back at some point when I'm done with it, you know. Well, of course, like, they never made it back to the library, you know. And so now here I am with this box of, you know, this host of books, like, you know, from years of going to this library. And this is the kind of stuff that, like, every time I glanced up at one on the shelf, there was just that little twinge somewhere, you know. And this is the kind of stuff, I mean, 8 and 9 for me, the power of them is you know, I believe in a God that's forgiving, right? And that I have been forgiven, God has forgiven me for this stuff. Even in the moment that I was doing it, God forgave it. The problem is, I'm not as forgiving as God is. I don't forgive myself for this stuff. And as long as I haven't cleaned this stuff up, I'm not going to accept the beautiful life that's opening up before me in AA. I'm not going to accept the gifts that God's trying to give me, because somewhere in the back of my head, I'm like, you did it. You succeeded in the con. You got away with the stuff. And there's that little scumbag still in there that I still feel like I'm still that same guy, you know? And every time I saw one of those books, I saw the little code, you know, the little Dewey Decimal thing at the bottom, you know, and I was like, ugh. So I show up at the library with this box of books, you know, and I set them down on the counter, you know, and I'm like, I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic who has found this program of recovery. You know, I've been taught that I need a spiritual way of life in order to survive. And what I need to do as part of that is to clean up the wrongs that I've done. And so I took these books, you know, over the years, and I'm here to return them. And the thing that was really, I mean, these people were like, I had no idea what to do with this. And so they're like, and really, like, they found it quite annoying because now they've got this giant box of books that they have to deal with. And they're trying to check them back in, and they're looking, and they're like, we don't even use this coding system anymore. Like, they couldn't even enter the books into the system, you know. So, but that was one more piece of freedom. You know, now I could look at my bookshelf and not have to feel that. And you know, I'll say on that too, I got some freedom out of that, but that was not the point of having done it. I got confused because I'd go to a lot of step meetings, and you know, where they were reading out of the 12 and 12, and I'd go to meetings that said, okay, this is a 9-step meeting, and I'd hear lots of different things. And it was an experience that caused me, you know, when I looked in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and it said, we've discovered a common solution, that was such a powerful promise to me, because I would be at meetings and hear the solutions that I didn't hear, that I heard were not common. I'd hear all kinds of different things. One person would say, oh, well, you know, in the 9th step, this isn't about me feeling better. This is about setting the other person free. You know, of setting them free of the harms that I've caused. And then I'd be at another 9-step meeting, and somebody would say, this isn't about them. This is about, I need to be released of these burdens so that I can live this way of life. You know, and I'd hear these. When I was taken through the book, I got to see neither one of those things is true. I got to see very clearly in black and white what they have to say about the point of these amends. They say our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people around us. You know, it's got nothing to do with whether I feel any better, and it's got nothing to do with whether the person in front of me feels any better. Now, certainly that's the ideal situation, you know, but what's really taking place in the process of those amends is I'm getting to experience, I'm going out in faith and saying, God has taken these things away. And so let me perform an act of faith and go out and heal this thing. And by my going out and doing that, I now on the other side of that amend am more fit to be of service to God and my fellows. I don't have the same level of fear anymore. And at the very least, here's one human being that I may possibly be able to be helpful to now that prior to that, maybe we didn't want anything to do with each other. You know, some of my most powerful amends were to ex-girlfriends. You know, I've heard people at meetings, I heard a guy share, you know, who had a bunch of sponsees, and he said, I don't make amends to exes, and I tell all my sponsees that they're not to make amends to their exes. You know, in our 4th step, in the sex inventory, it says, you know, when it talks about getting the stuff down on paper, it says, we were willing to set these matters straight. You know, I think a lot of the reason that there's so much apprehension about making amends to exes is because a lot of times it can go south. you know. And the reason it goes south is because my motives may not be too pure, right? Maybe I'm there to try to get the relationship going again. Maybe I just want to show that I've gotten better. And look, I'm not that same guy, you know what I mean? And like, there could be all kinds of different motivations. The problem is not the making amends to the ex. The problem is that I've got other motives going on. And that is going to be an issue no matter who I'm making the amend to. If I'm going to an old boss and I'm there because I want the job back or because I want the boss to see that I'm doing better than I used to be, it's going to be just as much trouble. If I'm going to make an amends to my parents because now I need some money from them, or because I want them to see that in spite of all their screw-ups, I'm doing really well. You know what I mean? It's not the relationship that's the problem, you know? So I need to, now it may mean that I need to do more work to get clear on that, to prepare myself for it, but it doesn't excuse me from the amend. And I'm telling you, that has been some of the most powerful stuff, because that's where I really got deep inside of somebody and did some real damage, you know, and that's the stuff that when I'm sitting here looking at my life today and saying, do I deserve this or not, those are the things that haunt me. The person that was bawling their eyes out in front of me, you know, because of how deeply that I had hurt them. I want to keep going, but I'm not going to. I'll just say, going through the process of this amends, you know, I got to see little by little by little more and more freedom, and each experience of that freedom gave me more power and motivation. I saw more stuff flowing through me that enabled me to do the next thing, you know, and my momentum got built up, and I heard it explained, you know, this is like dominoes. Like, when the dominoes are stacked close together, you hit one and they all start falling down, but if there's space between them, one falls and it misses the next one, you know, and so if that momentum is going, I need to keep moving. It can be a really dangerous thing to sit still for a little while, and I've been in that place, you know. I got stuck, and there was some more that I was sitting on, and I just recently picked back up a couple of cards that had not gotten, you know, had not gotten addressed for a while, and I'm getting to find out that there's even more freedom available than I had imagined. So I'm glad to be able to connect with that, because now maybe I'll have the motivation to go home and look at the next one, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you. So thank you.